Welcome to this Friday edition of Faith and Family. I'm your guest host, Pastor Rod Zwanisser, filling in for Andy Bates, who had the blessing of welcoming into this world a new baby boy, Oscar Benjamin Bates, born this past Monday to Andy and Lauren Bates. So happy for both of you, and we look forward to seeing the little guy. I saw a picture of that with Dad the other day. So congratulations, Andy and Lauren and Oscar Benjamin. And we give thanks not only to God for that, but also for our underwriter of Faith and Family, Concordia University, Wisconsin. What an exciting place. I've been following them on their Facebook and getting all their little news briefs coming out. Great place, great things happening. I think they're having a homecoming event this weekend with a parade, and it looks like a great place. Check out their website, and you can do that also at our webpage, kfuoam.org, and then look under the sponsor thing, and you'll see Concordia University Wisconsin's logo. Press on that. You'll get a direct link to theirs, and you can even take a virtual tour. Beautiful campus located on the shores of Lake Michigan there in the Milwaukee area. This week on Faith and Family, been looking at mental illnesses. And today we want to look at that specifically in older adults. Very unfortunate thing if you've ever been around it. And so we're going to look at today, how can we know if someone might be showing signs of these growing problems in older adults, dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. And when it's confirmed that someone you know might have those dreaded things, how do you care for them? How do you help them? How do you serve them? And even want to talk about today a very important thing. What about their faith? What about their faith that might even sound to be lost or forgotten when you talk to them? And we want to give some good news, as we are prone to do here at KFUO Worldwide, the messenger of good news. To help us do that, our guest today is Valerie Cooper. She's executive director for Laclede Groves, part of our good friends at Lutheran Senior Services. Welcome to Faith and Family, Valerie.
Thank you.
We want to welcome people, Valerie, to call in if you have a question or comment about these mental illnesses in the older population. You can do so here in the St. Louis area, 314-821-0850, or worldwide, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us at kfuo@kfuo.org. If you're familiar with Andy, normally has the email of family@kfuo.org, but he's got the computer, and so we can't use it. But we can take your emails at kfuo@kfuo.org. We're also going to have with us today our good friend, announcer, engineer extraordinaire, Buzz Ulrich, who has went through that with a dear family member. And I know it's you know, in the forefront of his mind and heart. And so we're going to let him speak to us about that also. Welcome in, Buzz.
Thanks, Rod. And Valerie, welcome in as well. Haven't seen you inside these studios yet.
No, not yet. Thank you for having me.
What do you think of these new digs?
It's beautiful.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And what I like is it's so brightly lit, but we don't have those old bulbs that make it really hot.
Right.
I remember when we were doing this remote before we even turned it on officially, and we were sitting over there and those lights were blaring at us. I said, they're cool. So this is really a cool space. Tell us, what are some of the more common mental health issues that you see among the older population, Valerie?
Well, we see a combination. With working at Laclede Groves in a continuing care retirement community, we typically see the dementias. With folks who've been diagnosed with dementia, though, there are many different kinds of dementia. And being diagnosed with the correct one so that you get the correct treatment is very important. And a lot of times that gets missed. So families, caregivers have to become a part of that prior to them coming to a retirement community. If they're living on their own, they really do have to be a part of that and be an advocate.
Absolutely. You know, and I know from 25 years of parish ministry, a lot of times dementia is not what some of us that are, you know, into our upper years think it might be, where you just can't remember a phone number or a computer password or a restaurant or something like that, or an event that it's not really those things. It's kind of different and more profound than that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Dementia and forgetfulness, memory loss, is not a normal part of aging. And dementia can be masked, too. You can have depression and not realize that it is actually a dementia, or the other way around. But it is not normal, a normal part of aging. But a lot of that is a myth that a lot of people think it is.
It sure is. And we need to dispel that, because, you know, I've had the privilege and honor, too, of being with some of my members. You know, the last one, just a touching story, and I probably get even teared up with it, that a person didn't have anybody else in the world, had a twin sister in the area that just, they were so alienated, no one to turn to for help. And so I started to help her and have her diagnosed and treated and cared for. And she said, please go with me to the neurologist. And I did. So I've sat in on how they test for this, and I'm amazed. And I'm not an expert, but I can, I think, quickly talking to somebody would quickly be able to surmise, are they a candidate for, you know, a professional to really look into it? And, you know, the first thing I always said to my people was, first, go to your medical doctor and get a thorough checkup, because I've seen times where, you know, urinary tract infections can make people really think terrible things. I've seen that in nursing homes.
Absolutely.
Even with my mother-in-law, she had that. And so check out that it could be some medical cause that's
correct,
causing weird behavior, weird thinking, weird speaking, right?
Absolutely. And a urinary tract infection is the number one thing that we look for when somebody shows new signs
is
of
really?
A dementia. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then there's other physical things such as heart disease, Parkinson's, other physical things. You need to rule those out, make sure those are being treated appropriately,
right,
before actually getting that dementia diagnosis.
And then I know that that personal physician of that dear lady, he had a brain scan, you know, requested and done. And the neurologist was just like, that's great. Now I can look at it,
right,
and make some determination. So that if you're suspect, I think that would be the first step, wouldn't it? Get to your family doctor or get a thorough examination.
Yes, definitely go to your primary doctor first. Medication side effects can also be a cause that may present as dementia or may mask a dementia or a depression, depending on what's going on with that person. The other thing that's important, especially as a family member or caregiver, is that a lot of older adults go to many different doctors. And sometimes those doctors are not in the same medical system. And so the communication about the medications that they're on, the way that those interact, and other physical things going on.
The whole physical and mental history of that person.
Exactly.
Yeah. Don't get shared. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's also a very big, medications and those interactions are huge.
How important is it, and maybe Buzz can chime in here too, how important is it that those of us that, you know, are family members or friends or even, you know, brothers and sisters in Christ and congregations in that, when we suspect someone that might be exhibiting behavior that might be candidate for these, we're not sure. How important is it to, as soon as we can, if they do have these illnesses, they get discovered. Does it help their treatability and their ability to function at a fairly normal level if you can find them out and start treating them early?
I think it depends. There are some medications out there that don't cure a dementia, but can help it to plateau or to stall it.
Inhibit a little bit, sure.
Right. And sometimes those work and sometimes those don't. The other thing is, though, that if somebody, as early as they can be a part in the decision-making of their treatment plan, the better off they're going to be in the long run to be able to try to make their own decisions for their future. So being able to get in early and to be able to get some of those interventions are a good thing.
Oh, that's a great point that you bring up, because I know in my cases, the people still had their wits about them that they could participate in. Okay, if we do have to move you out of your own home, your own residence, You know, there's some options, and so help us with those.
Right.
And that's so helpful for the caregivers and the family, and that if you do it early, you can line those things up to where the people are able to participate. Buzz, anything you want to chime in or ask that what we're talking about here?
Well, I'll go back for a couple minutes to something that you brought up already here, and that's once you have determined something is wrong with somebody, and they are to the point where you've already gone through the physical, and there's a determination that they need some care somewhere at a care facility. Going back to what you said, initially looking at a problem is something that maybe the family member will notice first. So even after you've gone through the determination that the person has the physical ailment, a dementia-related disease, Alzheimer's, one of those things, and they were already gone to the point of needing to be in a care, you still need to be in contact with that person. Because if you were the family member, and this was the case for me, my mom was with my dad daily until he passed in November. She saw him up until August every day because he lived with her. Then became the point where he had to be in a care facility. But she stayed there day in, day out, because almost right off the bat, you mentioned the urinary tract infection, that hit him. And he went nuts, basically, on top of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the family member that's there day in, day out, they're going to notice first off, before or after they're in a care facility, that there is a problem. If they're showing the initial signs of a dementia or one of those problems, they usually do see that, maybe slowly, but they do see the signs of it. And in talking with other family members or with medical care specialists, they will see this is the sign that I'm seeing. And then they can mention to the doctors and the nurses and everybody else and ask the questions. Are these what I think they are? Are these the right signs? And then in the case of, you know, these problems, once you're into the facility, they'll still see that probably faster than the other people that are living with them, because they're there day in, day out.
Yeah, and they've been their caregiver at home, and they know that person the best. And so they still are an advocate for that person because they do know that person the best. Absolutely.
And you know, what I discovered is that a lot of times these people early on, they know that they have these issues. And so they've learned by practice that, and they're amazing with this, that they can pretty well function in the past. Like the lady that I had the recent experience with, as I said, she was never married. Her family, they'd kind of been alienated. And so her real circle of friends were the ladies at church.
Right.
And the ladies at church noticed that she would always tilt the conversation to the past, and she had a great past. She retired from three different airlines, had an unbelievable amount of money, we discovered, and so she would always want to talk in the past. And if you got her to talk in the present, then you were very suspect. And I remember the day coming out of church one day, they said, you know, you've got to go talk with her, with Lily, because she's saying some weird things. Pastor, you've got to intervene. And so I went over to her and said, you know, how are you today? And she said, really good. And then she started talking about 15 years ago. And I said, well, what's going on with you recently? And then she said, do you know any policemen? And I said, yes. And she said, you got to get me some help, because there's a detective from another Detroit suburb that's coming to my driveway every single night and digging up little piles of dirt and leaving them by my driveway. And I'm instantly thinking, see,
something's
in the
wrong.
Present, she's not doing real good, but in the past. And so it made an appointment, took my wife with me so there wouldn't be any, you know, improper, even suspected. And we proceeded to talk with her. And every time she would talk in the past, we're thinking, nothing wrong. I would bring her back to the present or say, hey, you know, kind of what went on at church yesterday? She didn't have a good recall. Current things, she couldn't deal with at all, and had a slanted, you know, mm-hmm. perspective. And so I think, you know, that's pretty good warning signs that don't let them take you into the past, because you'll think they're really sharp. They're talking about their childhood, their teenage life, their college days, their work years, whatever. They can recall a lot of that. If you get them into the last few days where you and I should, do really well, they don't do well at all.
And it's easy as a family member because you don't want to believe there's something wrong, or as a caregiver. So it's very easy to look at those things and say, oh, they're just reminiscing about the past.
Yeah.
Or they're just this or that. My own mother was diagnosed at a very young age with a specific type of dementia. And in hindsight, we can go back probably 10 years and start to see the signs. It was about 2006 where we really thought it was depression. And it wasn't until 2010 that she got the frontotemporal lobe dementia diagnosis. And she's only 64.
Wow. That's a pretty young age, isn't it?
Very young. And that's a type of dementia that... it does strike you very young, but as a daughter, you don't want to believe that that's really something more is going on. You think that they can be treated, and you have to go through several doctors sometimes because, again, the symptoms present so differently in different people to really get drilled down to what's really going on.
And it takes a time, maybe even few visits, some tests to figure out really what's going on there, doesn't it?
It does. And some of the tools that physicians and social workers and healthcare professionals use, like the mini mental and things like that, depending on where somebody is in their disease process, what type of disease they have, and their level of education, I have seen when I've administered those tools, it can trick you into
yes.
thinking that they're a lot better off than they really are.
Yeah, yeah. And the experts, as I've been around, boy, are they good at kind of getting to the heart of it and making good diagnosis. So, probably resources to call the associations, the Alzheimer's Association, and get a good referral to one of these experts is important too. And to talk to your doctor, and a lot of times they'll have a referral to a specialist that would intervene in these cases. So I think we started to talk about this, but Buzz, when you see this in a loved one, it's kind of difficult. And so how does the family, react, and how should they react when they see signs and even late signs of the disease in a loved one?
Well, as you just mentioned, one of the best things to do is to actually get all the information. So you go to the experts, you go to the people that deal with the patient. You have to think of your loved one as the patient, because they are. But you don't necessarily think that way. You think as, well, that's mom, dad, cousin. And when you're in that position as the relative or as the close friend of the neighbor, you really have to kind of separate yourself and say, you know, we have to think about this in this particular context. They need treatment, but I don't know the answers. So there you go. There's plenty of places to go and get that information. As you mentioned, the Alzheimer's Association, even lssliving.org, you've got the aging answers on there. There's some very good questions on the website, and you can ask those questions of yourself and comparing what you're seeing with somebody.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that, Valerie, that website resources that you have there at Lutheran Senior Services.
We do. We have a lot of resources that folks can call in and go on our website and ask lots of different questions just to steer them in the right direction. We are an organization that believes in providing care to folks across the spectrum of their life in their older years. So whether that's retirement living or affordable housing or just social worker or just resources, just referrals to the right folks, because sometimes it can be difficult when you're going through that emotionally as a family member, caregiver, to know where to turn.
Yeah. And I was telling Valerie before we went on that my wife, when we moved here, she was so in love with the wonderful care that her parents got in Lutheran home there in the Detroit area, that she wanted to volunteer, and so she does that, and she works in the mental illness ward there,
yes,
at Merrimack Bluffs, and she just loves it. She calls them her family, yeah. And when we were gone for 3 weeks on vacation this summer, she really missed them, and she was really worried about were they all going to be there when she got back, and the Lord took one, but she said they're just delightful people, and she has fun with them. talking with them, playing games with them,
absolutely,
giving them exercises, and they're beautiful people. I mean, they're not what they used to be. They're shells of that, which is tough for the family and friends to be around. But the rest of us, I mean, you just love them. You know, when you see a friend or a coworker, Valerie, how would you approach them if you start to suspect some of this going on?
I think I would approach them, depending on the relationship, approach them by asking when the last time they saw their physician, what kind of things do they have, you know, going on? Do they talk to their physician about that? Can I offer to go with you? Are you feeling okay? And maybe even to a point where you can say, you know, I've started to notice that A, B, and C, or whatever you've noticed, because quite frankly, most people are not going to admit that there's something wrong. I distinctly remember the day that my mom finally said to me, there's something wrong in my brain. But it took a long time, and it took a lot for her to say that to me. And that's when I knew definitely that there was something wrong that we had to address.
You know, denial is so powerful.
It is.
And we all have that in us. And you know, it's always like, you know, at first, I don't even want to accept it to myself that I might have something going on. And then when you suspect it even more, I know it's going on. I don't want to face reality and hope it'll go away. And then when it doesn't, and I remember this lady that I was describing, she was really advanced. In fact, the neurologist in 10 minutes tells her that I'm afraid I'm going to have to institutionalize you against your will, because you cannot take care of herself. And that's when I intervened and said, you know, any possibility that myself as the leader responsible to you could care for this lady in her house, and we would have a plan, a treatment plan at your approval. And he said, my goodness, yes, I'd be open to that. I won't promise anything. But I remember in my first confrontation with her, and I told her, I think we need to get help for you. She said, you know, Pastor, I'm terrified of what might happen to me. But now I feel really good that you promised you're going to do all in your effort to make it good for me. And I said, that's my promise. And I held to that. And we had quite the team. So I think, you know, is that part of it, Valerie, that we can express not only that they need to get this checked out, but I like your suggestion too. Don't just say, hey, go get it checked out. I'm there for you. If I can go along with you to give you just some, you know, some assurance, I know it's got to be fearful. I'll be there with you just to help you.
Absolutely. Just reaching out. And they may say no, and that's okay.
Sure.
But to know psychologically that they do have somebody there that can support them, whether it's this type of illness or any other type of illness, it's just that somebody cares. And, you know, there are a lot of folks, older adults living in their homes, that their children don't live in the state. They don't live near them, or they don't have children, never married.
Yeah.
And, again, their church friends might be their social network, or they could be feeling very alone. So just to offer that support, and not what can I do for you, because they won't be able to answer that question. I am here for you.
Right.
I am here for you.
And you know, we would just at random have people call and just drop in to make sure she was okay. I paid for we felt like we had such a great team, an individual that's an expert in evaluating the home environment for safety.
Yes.
Made some changes.
Great idea.
And we felt good. And so those kind of things, you know, if you have to, those are great things to do. This is, you know, good that we're talking about this, because people out there that are hearing us, and they know how important it is to get this out in the open and to find and establish a team of people that can begin to care and love this individual. And I hope if I ever come to that, there's a team like that for me.
And it does take a team. There is no doubt about it.
And we can help too for all of us. And we hope that the Lord would do that today to help us to start to look for these and be willing to be a part of a team, to reach out in love, the love of Jesus Christ, to these older people with mental illness. Stick with us. We'll be right back to talk about this. You're listening to Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Due to chronic spine pain, I get monthly acupuncture treatments from a fine Christian doctor. Over the year, we've gotten to know each other well. Due to recent happenings on abortion, I was telling him about the horrific ways abortionists in America kill babies who survive late-term abortions and are born alive. He thought abortion was only legal during the first 3 months. My doctor was so appalled, he responded, "I don't believe you." Next month, after he's had time to digest our conversation, I'll take him documentation. My reason for telling you is there are lots of people in your sphere of influence who don't know the reality of late abortion. So I've put together details. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. Now, go save lives by educating those around you.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Our mission at KFUO is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the nations. Today's internet capabilities give us the opportunity to do that. Listeners from all over the world can follow the ministry of KFUO via our website, Facebook, Wi-Fi radios, and smartphone apps. You can listen to KFUO Radio 24 hours a day, anywhere with our on-demand programs and live audio streams. Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
This next week on His Time, we'll walk through Paul's letter to the Philippians. It's called his Epistle of Joy, and he sure teaches us to rejoice always. We'll also talk with Dr. Charles Aaron about creation as shape and meaning of the biblical story. And Dr. Tim Seleska will join us to discuss the Lay Bible Institute on the Psalms. Join me, Randy Asbury, right here on His Time.
Weekday mornings beginning at 7 a.m. on KFUO.
The psalmist has written, "Consider how I love your precepts. Revive me, O Lord, according to your loving kindness." Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. Constantly working at your job and other responsibilities can drain and exhaust you. You need renewal from God according to his loving kindness. I therefore invite you to join me for Jubilation this Sunday when I'll weave word and song together in a renewing sort of way. That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
San Antonio's leaders have approved anti-bias protections for gay and transgender residents, despite the disapproval of top Texas Republicans and religious conservatives like Jack Finger.
This thing violates our constitutional rights to freedom of speech, freedom of religion.
The 8-3 council vote bans discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Supporter Melissa Rodriguez says,
"This will be a legal protection that we need in order to feel safe in public."
The ordinance applies to most city contracts and contractors, prohibits city officials from discriminating in their official capacity, and forbids businesses like restaurants or hotels from refusing to serve customers based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Peter Onofre, an elder at New Life Christian Center, told the council,
"I cannot separate the decisions I make from the faith that I have."
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. Rod Zwanes are filling in for Andy Bates. You might even be listening, Andy. Way to go. Beautiful new son, Oscar Benjamin Bates. Just enjoy those little ones because they grow up fast. And, you know, when people grow into their mid to later years, sometimes they can develop these, I just have to say, they're horrific, terrible diseases, these mental illnesses of older adults. And to talk about that, we have Valerie Cooper, Executive Director for Laclede Groves, very popular and just wonderful facility, part of Lutheran Senior Services. And also, Buzz Ulrich is here with us today since he's had some personal experience with this. Let's talk about this one. Is dementia permanent from what we know? Can it be reversed or cured?
From what we know, it cannot be reversed or cured at this time. You know, research continues, but from what I understand with Alzheimer's, it is one of the diseases that there is no cure.
And as you said before, and that's been my experience with it too, that the experts have said all they can do at the very best is to sometimes slow it down. Looks like it stopped, but it really isn't. And just to give them as much normal life for as long as they can.
Exactly. And if someone can stay at home for as long as they can, that's always the ideal thing to do. And there are lots of things out there that can help keep somebody safe in their home. Lots of different technologies and things like that that can help keep people safe if they're able to.
Yeah, I remember that first day with the neurologist, and he started off and was just talking, and then all of a sudden he wheeled around and looked at me and said, are you her son? I said, no. And said, who are you? I said, well, I'm her pastor. And then he said, well, what are you doing here? And I told him, and then he turned around to Lily and said, amazing that this man would do that for you. And he just said, God bless you. And then when I told him about, can we do a plan to keep her in home? He said, man, you're something else. He said, absolutely, I'd work with you.
Yes.
And he said, put it in writing. And he just worked. He was part of our team, he would say.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. When you can have the physicians as part of your team, that is certainly key. But it is important to remember that, especially with Alzheimer's in particular, there is a safety factor when somebody does start to show signs of wandering. And not just with Alzheimer's, other dementias as well, that people can get lost. We lost my own mother for 24 hours.
For 24 hours.
She was traveling with my dad on a business trip in Chicago, and we lost her for 24 hours.
Wow.
And that was the point where we said, oh my gosh, we really thought she could stay by herself, and clearly she can't. And so it's easy to miss that as well. So keeping people as safe as possible, as early as possible, is very important as well.
Oh, you know, locks on the doors and all that, that's so threatening. And even then the safety of the normal caregiver and people in that house becomes threatened.
Yes.
So a lot of things that can go bad for these people that sometimes can't think clearly for themselves.
And you have to, as the caregiver, continue to look at the decline and the changes, how they are today. You know, maybe they can stay at home with some interventions, but we do have to continually be aware of the things that do change that are putting their safety at risk.
Sure, sure. And then there are beautiful facilities there today, even better ones all the time, that they can be cared for and still loved by their family and friends.
That's right. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, trying to, at least what we try to do is to see that person as the person they are, the person they were, and not have them fit into our model or just an institutional type of care, but we are really working towards a person-centered model where we really are caring for that person and that whole person, not just the disease that they have, but caring for that whole person spiritually, physically, mentally, socially, everything. It's very important.
Yeah. And so in essence, not giving up on this as a human being for whom Jesus created, redeemed, and loved, and what's it take to heaven. And so dealing with all of them,
exactly.
their physical health, their spiritual health, and all of that. And that's so true.
And their dignity.
Yeah, their dignity.
Because now you're responsible for their dignity as well. Their dignity as a person, and to helping people to remember they are a person. So we try very hard to do that.
Buzz, any perspective on the kind of the discussion that we're in right now?
Well, I was thinking about that very point where you're saying keeping them involved in something, especially if you're the family member or if you're the caregiver in the home before they're in the skilled facility, you have to make sure that they realize this is daily living and we're going to continue to do this as much as we possibly can. Even once they get to the point where they aren't cared for at home anymore, you still can, as the relative, the friend, go and visit on a daily basis and keep them updated with things. Keep cueing them. It's something that we hear about is cueing somebody. It's an important thing to learn almost right off the bat when you know somebody who has one of these diseases, to keep them mentally involved in something on a daily basis. Rod and I understand certain things here. We're musicians. We'll be musicians the rest of our lives. And my dad was that way. We kept him playing in the band as long as we could.
There you go. Absolutely.
And that's one way of getting it. If you have a relative that plays a musical instrument, you keep them doing that daily if possible, all the way up to the point where they're no longer able to play a song or play a phrase. The same thing goes with reading books. You're a voracious reader, Rod. How would it be if you knew somebody who's a voracious reader and you realized they stopped reading?
Yeah. And, you know, that's the sad part, too, that you see is that some people are the things that their loved ones and friends know that they're really into, they're not into anymore. They do have those changes sometimes.
Yes.
And other things happen. And, you know, I love to hear when my blessed wife comes back from being with her new family over there. And she'll say things like, today I played toss the ball game with them. And I said, well, how did that go? And she said, well, you know, as it happens a lot of times, there's a group of about 12 of them, and 8 of them were the only ones that wanted to play. And so they said, the other 4, you don't have to play. But they were having so much fun, the 8 that were playing. The other 4 were finally drawing
in,
and they had a great time.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing about taking them, meeting them where they are.
Yes.
And having so much respect for their dignity.
Yes.
You don't treat them like kids.
Right.
You just treat them like humans that want to do these things, need this companionship.
Yes. And I think it can be very difficult, whether you're a family member, a friend, a companion, whatever. It can be very difficult for some folks to interact with people once they've gotten to a point where conversations may make you feel uncomfortable because they've forgotten or they answer something wrong.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to remember that we can just continually validate.
Yeah.
So if you think today's December 14th, so what?
So
okay,
what?
It
That's
is.
Right. Yeah.
And think about some things, just some questions that you can ask those folks that the answer really doesn't matter. You know, tell me about 20 years ago. Tell me about your job, and to engage them in that conversation. But for caregivers and visitors, sometimes that can be hard sometimes.
You know, one of the most interesting things that's happened recently to me is I was in a weird way kind of reunited with an old high school friend who described that they just lost their mother to Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And they discovered that it's in their genes.
Yeah.
They're probably going to get it too. And then they asked me a question. And I know this is why the Lord put us together again. I know you're a pastor now. Hey, Rod, what's your belief that before my parent was really diagnosed and it went down really fast with Alzheimer's, they were a beautiful Christian. But at the end, when I'd even ask and try to talk about Christ, they said they didn't care, didn't believe. What do you think? And, you know, it hit me. It hit me. The passage, beautiful passage in Romans 8. Can anything separate us from the love of God that's in Christ Jesus? And he goes through a great list, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the list here. Tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, or sword. And then I put in, well, let's ask the question. You know, because none of those can take away the love of God that's in Jesus Christ.
Right.
Can Alzheimer's, is it powerful enough? Is cancer, you know, is old age,
right,
natural causes? They're not. And so I tell them, you know, that I understand it, that there's a soul that in a person. And so what if their mind can't connect with their mouth anymore to say the right thing
that's
right in their soul? If it's in the soul, God knows it.
It's still
and
there.
And that's all that counts.
It's still there.
And so I said, I think they're going to be in heaven. And
that's right.
They just started crying, thought that was the most beautiful thing. So that's not from me. That's right from God.
That's right.
And you know, that spurred me on even more when I talked to these people to continue to share Jesus with them, whether they want to hear it or not. You know, because I know that word, just like with a fetus, a little baby can get in there, we know, John the Baptizer. So can it get through to a person with these mental illnesses?
Right. And we really, truly don't know. So we have to believe and have faith.
It's like speaking to a person that's in a coma. I've had them come out and say, I heard every word you said to me. And so I love, too, I know at your facilities you have people come in, deaconesses, pastors, chaplains.
Absolutely.
others come in and share the Word of God with them? You said you treat them spiritually?
Absolutely, we do. We have a clinical pastoral education program. We have our staff chaplains. We certainly have folks of other faiths other than the Lutheran faith come in, and we have our church services that we actually have on closed circuit television on every TV in our community.
Oh,
so
that's great.
If you're someplace where you can't get to the chapel, you can still watch and listen.
Participate.
Yes.
That's
yes.
great.
Yes.
So those important. In those confined areas still can take part in the service.
And we try actually to get as many of those folks as we can to the actual chapel. But if we can't, yes, we turn that on. And that's what you hear throughout our community.
Just broadcast the worldwide KFUO 24/7, right?
There you go.
Well, you know, let's talk about some stories of these beautiful people that go through this. You know, I remember the first time I was a young pastor up in British Columbia, and I came, my parsonage sat right next to the church. So beautiful, glorious. I think it was a Thursday morning. I was walking from the parsonage to the church office, and I see this little lady dressed up and sitting in her car. So I went over to her. And I said, you know, Edith, what's going on? And she said, well, you better get in there, Pastor, because church is going to start in 10 minutes. And I said, you know, you got to be joking. It's Thursday. She said, no, it isn't. Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And she in her mind believed it was Sunday morning. And it was 10 to 10. And I was shocked. I thought she was drinking or something. I tried to determine that. And it turned out that she had the beginnings of that.
Yes.
And you know, her family, she had a son that lived nearby. He was in denial too. Didn't want to believe it. Didn't want to do anything.
Easy to be in denial.
It really is.
You don't want to
see
your loved one like that. Absolutely.
But we got her help, and she did pretty well for quite a while. So I know there's so many other wonderful stories. I'm trying to think of the retired Supreme Court Justice, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Oh.
And
yes.
Her husband had it.
Right.
And they had, you know, chronicled, and it just broke my heart. But what a strong lady. I remember seeing the maybe it was on 60 Minutes, where she was standing being interviewed about it, and her husband had a girlfriend in the facility, and she was just watching this, and it didn't really bother her.
Very, very common.
And
for that
I
to
thought
happen.
That she probably came to the conclusion, as I would have to, he's not in his right mind.
Exactly.
Right?
And very common for that to happen.
Is it?
And so you do have to talk to those spouses about that. And it can be difficult for some, but you do. You have to just, you know, it's not the right mind.
Yeah. They're not thinking clearly. If they were
right.
able to, they certainly wouldn't be doing this to that other person or to themselves or you.
And here's to that point a little bit, is that the caregivers and the family members, it is very easy to feel very guilty about getting tired and worn out and saying, I can't do this anymore.
Or not wanting to go that often to
right.
see them.
Or not wanting to go that often to see them. It's very easy. And caregivers need to take care of themselves, because what can happen, and I've seen it happen many times, is that something ends up happening to the caregiver because they're not taking care of themselves, because they're so busy taking care of someone else. And taking a respite and, you know, calling the Alzheimer's Association and getting those resources where you can, you know, have somebody go somewhere for a respite. And really, we need to help caregivers not feel guilty for that.
That's
or
so
not
good.
Feel guilty when they say, I can't do this anymore.
I heard it somewhere yesterday, and it might have been even Jane Wilkie. On the morning program, said it's similar to the announcement they give on the airplane flights. In the event we should lose oxygen, the pressure in the cabin, when the masks come down, be sure first, if you are with children. Or someone else, that you put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Before Great analogy.
And that is the real analogy, isn't it? Take mm-hmm. care of yourself so you can be the best caregiver for your loved ones or friends.
Absolutely. It's a great analogy.
Well, you've seen a lot of older adults with these diseases. I'm probably guessing by this point, you've seen some actual success stories with the families. Can you share some of those?
success stories with the families in
being involved.
You know, those folks who do come on a regular basis, but don't feel like they have to come and be there for 2 hours, 3 hours. You don't have to. But to be able to come in and to interact, even if it's for 10 or 15 minutes, and to take those folks out as long as you can, but then also recognizing when you can't anymore. Because a lot of times folks that do have Alzheimer's or related dementias, the stimulation of being out is too much for them. And they want to be back in that environment that's controlled. So the families that I think can get through the denial and get the help that they need so that they can be the best support and advocate for that person and find the joy at this part in their life. It is so easy to not find the joy in that person because they're not the person that you were and you're angry about it or you feel that they were cheated. It is what is in God's plan, and you have to find the joy. And so there are some the family members that can find that joy are the ones that are the true success stories.
Yeah, and I remember our team with Lily, we used to, you know, stop feeling sorry for ourselves and for Lil and share the highlights and the joys of her life. And so
celebrate
we would
her.
Pump each other. Yeah, celebrate her. That's really good, or him.
Yeah.
That's really good to remember him at another time, and that's what keeps you going.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely, it does.
And saying, that's the same person. They're just, you know, ill right now, and they're going to come out of it. We know on the other side,
right,
for the believers. And so that's what we live for. Great. Besides your own great resources, and you mentioned the Alzheimer's Society, any others that come to your mind that you could recommend to families about these mental illnesses?
Yeah, there's all kinds of great resources out there, you know, between the Alzheimer's Association, even the frontal temporal degeneration, dementia. They have their own website, their own support. Same thing with Parkinson's and some of those that have those dementias. They all have their own associations that can be great resources because each of those is a little bit different. For the more mental illness side, for the depression, things like that, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill is a great resource. The CDC is also a good resource for folks just to gather information.
And I would assume, too, that good family physicians are great resources, too, because they've touched this in their own practice, likely, and have connections to professionals that they can refer and get you hooked up with people that can really help and support you.
And especially, at least in St. Louis, you know, and in other cities as well, find those folks who do have a practice that focuses on a geriatric population or have done research in these types of diagnosis. Those are the folks you want to get to, the ones that have really dealt with the older adults.
Yeah, and just asking around too, I know you find just great contacts that potentially can become great team members.
Yes.
And that is, I think, kind of important here too, isn't it, to have a team so you don't feel like the burden is all of yours.
Oh, definitely. Because again, it's hard. It's hard to be a part of that team. So you have to be able to shift that responsibility sometimes and be able to step away again and take care of yourself. So having that team to support you is quite a blessing.
Yes. And if you've got a last minute question or comment about mental illness in older adults, we'd love to hear from you. 314-821-0850 or 800-730-2727 or email us at kfuo@kfuo.org. You know, it kind of goes back to the good physician of soul and body caring for us and having trust that there's going to be at times even unknown people that are going to step in and hopefully take care of us. You know, that always motivates me that, you know, when I'm faced with knowing someone like that, the little voice goes off in my head, okay, Rod, you got to start practicing what you preach here, that you got to step forward and be that maybe even total stranger or friend on the side that jumps in now and takes part in caring for this soul. And, you know, I think what we want to express, and I like your word, Valerie, the joy of doing that. Mm-hmm. There's great benefit from this. And so I know you've got a great volunteer network at your facilities.
Yes.
Tell us how people can be blessed and joyfully blessed by volunteering to maybe even come into one of these wards and just be with the people. I know it's not that hard, and they will derive so much joy from stepping forward. How can they do that to volunteer?
Absolutely. Volunteering, any time of the day, and it can be as simple as sitting down and just having a conversation. Even if that person can't have a conversation,
you can still have a conversation. Sure.
Yeah. And you can trigger memories, and triggering those memories is a beautiful thing. We have structured activities that they can participate in, visiting or taking folks on a walk. It can be that simple.
That simple.
And the joy you get from the joy you'll see in their faces is just immeasurable.
Yeah, it is. The return far exceeds the expenditure of time and energy.
Right, because it doesn't take that much time and energy to bring joy to somebody's life like that.
Yeah. You know, the old saying, take two aspirin, call me in the morning. The real one is go and help somebody other yourself.
Yes.
And you will be so blessed.
Yes, you feel so good when you help somebody else like that, and you know that you're doing the right thing.
Now, you have some people there at Lutheran Senior Services that do nothing but help people to volunteer to get matched up, get all ready in that.
We do.
Pam Gordon still involved with that, Valerie?
Yes, Pam Gordon for our organization as a whole, yes. You can contact her, and she can help get you matched up with the right volunteer opportunities.
But any of your places can direct a person that wants to volunteer
absolutely
to the right people, right?
We love our volunteers. They're the best, yes.
And your website again?
At www.lssliving.org.
We have a caller. Excellent. Linda in Nashville, Illinois. A question about medication.
Linda, it's not a question. It's what I've been through.
Okay.
I was once on the benzodiazepine transzene clorazepate for epileptic seizures. By 1994, I could not even tell the doctors Clinton was president of the United States. And that was when a brand new medicine came out to help the patient. Also, in 99, I had brain surgery with the memory part of the brain removed, and I can function better now than I could on that. Much information, the doctor had said, went to the right side of my brain. So that's the reason I can, before it was spread to the memory part of the brain, the seizures, that's the reason I can remember things further back than newer things. Like names, I murder names, new information I have problems keeping.
A lot of us do that too, Linda. I have trouble with new names myself.
But
I'm so glad to hear that you've had some relief, it sounds like, and you seem to have great joy in that, and we celebrate that with you.
And if you need verification, go to the Epilepsy Comprehensive Epilepsy Care Center at St. Luke's. They probably don't remember me anymore. They're probably not, you know, maybe he's not even in, you know, practicing there, that particular doctor.
Uh-huh. Well, listen, thanks for sharing that, Linda, and thanks for listening there in Nashville, Illinois.
Sure,
and Lord's blessings to you. Any final comments here, Buzz, before we wrap it up?
Well, I kind of tend to think that it's really nice to have senior living facilities helping us out, because we know that there's a certain point when the management of the disease has to be moved over. I'm assuming that there's always a doctor available.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Doctor, in different types of doctors, whether it's a primary physician, a geriatric psychiatrist, nurse practitioners, et cetera.
The whole team. Valerie Cooper, Executive Director at Laclede Groves in Lutheran Senior Services. Thanks for being our guest. This has been just a great discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned next week when we will have more Faith and Family here on Monday. God bless your weekend.